is up, lacrosse world? This is the In the Crease podcast. I'm Dan Abern. I got Kyle Devitt up in the Shire. Kyle, it's that time. It's playoff season.
Team, family, friends, the end of the season is nigh. The field is set. We're going to get to our thoughts on the teams and the bracket. But first, we're going to tell you how they got there. And I need to know how your weekend was, Daniel.
It was good, man. I was away in Ohio for my sister's college graduation. It was fun, but I didn't like being away from the fight. Too many games I had to watch on my phone, looking like a weirdo in the corner. But like I said, went to my sister's graduation, partied like a college kid again. But man, it doesn't feel good to be out of the fight. However, I did make time to watch the two games that we're going to talk about today. Maryland and Hopkins in the Big Ten Championship, and then Yale and Cornell in the Ivy League Championship. Let's get into it, Kyle. Hopkins 13, Maryland 10. Hopkins gets the automatic qualifier in the Big Ten Championship by taking down the Maryland Terrapins. Better than the last one, Kyle?
Yeah, listen, I will say this. The second half almost made up for the first half and the previous meeting of these two squads. To me, and I actually take no pleasure in saying this, Maryland really fell apart when the physicality of the game came to the fore.
Okay.
What do you make of that statement?
I can agree with that. First off, I want to say, though, I've never had a reaction like I have this week to your anti-rivalry sentiment than this week. Even my dad was like, when they made the final, I was like, ha ha ha, Kyle's all mad now, ain't he? Ha ha ha.
I love that people think I care. That's like my favorite thing. Like, I love it. People are all salty on Twitter. Oh, they don't like the Baltimore people don't like being made fun of. It's true.
But I'll cop to what you just said there a little bit, because I was watching the game and it just kind of felt like Maryland was a little flat throughout points in the game. But I just felt that Hopkins executed at the points that they really needed to do in order to win the game. I thought faceoffs were huge. Hunter Moreland and the wings played really well. Turnbull was huge in the cage. And then they just canned their shots on offense. And they dominated in that third quarter stretch. Just exploded offensively. I mean, Maryland kind of felt flat, but I also think they just didn't have the ball a lot. I thought that when they did get possession, they kind of just turned it into offense at some point. But, you know, when we're talking about that, I think five-goal run in that third quarter, it felt like Maryland had like 2 to 3 possessions at max, and everything was going Hopkins' way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that comes down to Connor Kelly is still clearly hobbled, you know, and Jared Bernhardt has fallen off a cliff production-wise, at least. And then, of course, you know, not to like go back to my previous points, but Darren Morris did the thing where he didn't move on several shots that went in, finished with 4 saves. Dan, did you know that 4 is 2 times 2? 2. I do want to bring up this point, though. We both said, I'm including myself in this, that Maryland was a lock to get to Gillette. Do you still believe that after watching this game and seeing the draw? Because I don't know how you could.
I actually think my optimism grew after I saw the draw. We'll get to that. Let's talk about this, though. Connor Kelly definitely played better in this game than he did a week ago. We can cop to that, right? What, do you have 2 goals and 2 assists in this game? Much sure. Better passing the ball, I thought. There does look to be a little dip and just getting separation when he's dodging. But the Bernhardt slump is truly perplexing, as he played so well against Rutgers, but then just couldn't come up with anything against Hopkins. And from an athletic perspective, this guy can run past anybody in college lacrosse, and he just doesn't seem to get up against Hopkins. I think you got to give the Hopkins defense a lot of credit for that. But in the absence of Kelly and Bernhardt's kind of oomph, I feel like Maryland's complimentary scorers like Rotans, Bubba Fairman, starting to come to life a little bit at this juncture in the season. I think that's promising, but then you also look at them losing and they're like, whoa, we have all these guys scoring, but we're not winning games. I do think this was a way out of character performance for the Maryland defense. I feel like after last week's Hopkins result, only giving up 7 goals, Dan Moore's playing incredible. I felt like a lot of people thought Maryland's defense was kind of like back to that standard that they've raised for themselves over the past couple of years. And this performance was a complete reverse of that. Just looked off in so many different places. I haven't used the word lock to describe Maryland as a championship weekend team.
All
right. All right. I said I thought I would be surprised if they fell before the Final Four. But, you know, I did look at the draw. I think that Maryland could have a tough game in the first round. Whoever their quarterfinal opponent will be could give them a scare. But, you know, I've said this before. I feel like this is one of the more complete teams that we'll see in the field. So I wouldn't say they're locked, but I do feel strongly about them. So,
all right, well, let's talk Hopkins. So there are times where the Blue Jays' skill sets on offense have just made me stop and be like, okay, how is this working? You know, they have their playmakers, Stanwyck, Williams, Tinney. They have their floating shooters. And also, I mean, Concannon's not just a floating shooter, but he is good at that. Vallis and Marr. But I've yet to see a game where they all deliver at the same level. It's like one of them picks a game to step up and have a great day. And that was obviously Cole Williams here. The thing that, you know, makes me admire the way they play is that they don't need that all the time. They got key goals in the second half from Tom Guida. That dude like hasn't gotten free from a defender for like 3 weeks, and he just pops up 3 Gs because he just saw an opportunity and took it. You know, they have DeSimone out there waiting to get the ball most of the time. But I feel like here they seem to really know what the game plan was, where to go, when to pick, when to pop. You know, the best example of that is Marr's goal where he popped all the way up after a 2-pass over the top of him and just caught and shot. And it was, you knew it was going in as soon as he caught the ball. I just feel like they took the game by its stupid little stall ball face and just screamed at it. It was like, no, we are scoring. And I'll tell you what, Dan, that's a Hopkins team I can get behind. I can get behind that. I can't get behind the stall ball, don't do early offense or you'll die crap. Like, I want to see a team that, like, has the killer instinct from the jump. And I think that Hopkins had it here, and they didn't have it the last time they played Maryland.
Yeah, I'll agree to that point because I felt like the win was – it was poised, but it was also free-flowing and a little reckless. Like, it just kind of felt that every time they saw a yellow light, they were hitting the gas. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just said, maybe I won't make it. And then they're like, nah. We are making this light. And I think you're right. I think in that game back at Homewood, 8-9 days ago now, it just didn't feel that same – it didn't have that same vibe from them. But, you know, Hopkins is darn good when they are clicking like that. They were in this game. And I think the big thing for me is that Shaq Stanwyck looks pretty good for a guy whose season was in doubt just a little over a week ago. I remember – doing all the rivalry previews and was like, yeah, I don't think Shaq Stanwyck's going to play in this game. And all of a sudden he runs out of the tunnel. I'm like, wow, this is really going to happen. They have a lot of weapons on offense, a lot of skill sets. I thought, you know, Cole Williams coming alive in this game was huge. But there's been some major strides on the defensive end for Hopkins in the past 3 or so games. And I think that's what's giving a lot of people optimism going down the road. Potential is high for Johns Hopkins. Kyle, let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Trimino. Protein is an important part of any athlete's diet. Supplement your protein diet without excess calories and fat by going with Trimino protein-infused water. Go beyond hydration with Trimino protein-infused water packed with protein and B vitamins to sustain your game. Trimino has 7 grams of whey protein, no sugars, no carbs, no fats, and only 28 calories. I'm loving all the tropical flavors we got. I'm actually drinking a strawberry lemonade right now. I love it. I also love the citrus flavor. Give these a try. You can pick up Trimino at CVS, local retailers near you, and always on Amazon. Protein never tasted so good. Kyle, up next, though, we got T-shirt pitch of the week. Do we have anything this week? Is this segment defunct?
So here's what I'm going to do. I've been waiting for this. We're not, because I've yet to see a dime from the residuals of my other T-shirt ideas, and I'm upset. So pay the man his money or get out. And we're not doing it anymore. And also, I'm sick of people making fun of the ones that are so bad we shouldn't have talked about them. So we're not going to do T-shirt pitch of the week this week. You're fired for at least a week. Maybe we'll have some good ones after next week's results, but not this week, which brings us to our next segment.
That's right. Towaratan Watch. As much outrage as we've seen from Selection Sunday, we will see even more when the Towaratan finalists are announced, because there are seven guys that should be there and only five guys show up.
You're so heated. You're so heated about this. And I tried to explain it to you, but we're going to get there. We're going to get there. So mine are unchanged. I still think it's Baptiste and Ben Reeves and Pat Spencer. I don't think and here's my reason, because I know you're upset about the T thing. I don't think that he has a shot because the committee isn't going to put a sophomore up there. They're just not. And you know what? They're probably not going to have Baptiste win it because they don't even know how to determine how dominant his face-off history has been. And they're going to have the Ireland comp. It's like, oh, well, TD Ireland has 80%, so he's better than Baptiste. Why isn't he on there? Well, Baptiste shouldn't be on there. Like, that's going to – they lost 8-3 to Georgetown, the Big East team. Nope. He's out. Face-off guys don't matter. Like, I feel like they're going to be that dismissive, but I'm going to fight for that. I'm going to fight for that not being the case. I'm going to keep Baptiste in there. Ben Reeves at number two. Prove that he is, once again, the truth, becoming Yale's all-time goal scorer. Congrats to him, even though they lost in the Ivy League title game, which we'll get to. And then Pat Spencer is just the only other guy besides Teat, I think, that can completely dissect a defense. And then at four, I'll put Teat on there at four. And then Connor Kelly at five, because I don't think Connor Kelly is fully healthy. But I don't see the point in arguing for anybody else right now. I just don't see the point.
Okay. So I think that, like I said, there's going to be major outrage over the Towaratan finalists, because there are seven guys who absolutely need to be there, but only five guys make it. This is going to be nuts. Number one right now, Trevor Baptiste, greatest faceoff guy of all time. Number two, Justin Gutterding, 94, 96 some points. One of the best players on one of the premier teams in the tournament. Number three, Connor Kelly, one of the premier offensive players on one of the best teams in the country. Number four, Ben Reeves, same shtick as the two guys above him. Five, Jeff Teat, and this is where we get problems. And I think Jeff Teat is going to be left off exactly for the reasons you said. He's a sophomore. But how do we leave him off? Before this weekend, he was the leading scorer in the nation. How do you leave the leading scorer of the nation off a list like this? That just seems crazy, crazy to me. Then I got Patrick Spencer. You know, he might be feeling the heat too, being a junior. You know, this is a really senior-centric group. He's one of the best players on one of the best teams of the tournament. How do we come to grips with this list? Because then I have Connor Fields. How do you leave Connor Fields off? I know he's been hurt. I just can't get over the fact that Connor Fields had an opportunity to pass the all-time scoring record in Division I at the beginning of the season and now is on the cusp of not making the Towaratan finalist committee because of his injury. I feel like you can't exclude him because he's a senior. He's one of the premier offensive players on the number two seed. If he scores his way to championship weekend and he's not a finalist, the award almost feels like a sham. So here are the questions that really encompass this whole beef that I have right now. Does Connor Kelly get snubbed because of his lack of production? His numbers aren't as great as a lot of guys on this list. Does Jeff Teat get snubbed because he's a sophomore? does Patrick Spencer get snubbed because he's a junior? Does Connor Fields get snubbed because he's hurt? He was hurt. Like I said, there's a tough decision to make here, and no one is going to be happy with the final result. There will be outrage. There will be outrage. The committee who determines the finalists will have some splaining to do.
I don't know. I think that, unfortunately, when you're talking about awards like this, like, injuries hurt your chances. If you miss games, it hurts your chances. And it's no fault of your own, you know, but we're talking about a committee that doesn't care about that. They don't care. They're going to look at numbers. They're going to look at total points. They're going to look at points per game. And they're going to look where the team they play on finishes when the season ends. That's what they're looking at. They're not looking at tape. Like, are you kidding me? You think this committee is looking at tape? Tape? No. No, that's not happening.
Yeah, it's just so hard to imagine these scenarios. But, you know, Kyle, I have a question for you. Which of these two candidates isn't making it, and what are the reasons why?
It's Fields. I don't think Fields makes it because of the injuries. That's the only reason. This is the thing. Like, no one gives the Albany team or Connor Fields more love than us. It's not about that. It's about what we think the Towaratunk committee will do. And I think that's what they'll do. They'll take off the sophomore, and they'll take off the guy who got hurt.
Damn. No Connor Fields, no T.
Sorry.
Damn. Kyle, let's move on to the Ivy League championship. Cornell 14, Yale 8. Cornell going to the tournament.
See, I'm not going to do what y'all think I'm going to do and point out that Yale goalkeeper Jack Starr had two saves. We're not doing the two-bit, for real. I am not doing it. You can't put this game on Starr any more than you can put it on Maryland's loss to Morris. You can't do a one-for-one, and because it doesn't work. There's so many other factors that went into Cornell winning and Yale losing. Right?
Yeah, but I will say it was a mighty, mighty struggle for Jack Starr in this game. And that's really been the only knock against Yale all year. You know, I've talked about Maryland as being one of the more complete teams in the country. I think Yale is close to that, but I feel like they've always had a bit of a question mark with the inconsistency from the goalkeeper position. We've seen tremendous improvements from their defense, particularly with Chris Fake, but it's goaltending. Yeah,
and you all...
It's goaltending, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people are going to focus on how many shots Cornell got inside on the Yale defense, and I think that's totally fair. I think you'd be a fool not to see that or mention it. Still, I don't think that's where they lost it. I think it was on the other side of the field, and I don't think Yale took Yale shots here, you know, other than Reeves, who was obviously phenomenal. I think it took so much work for them to get a look that was, like, away from the strong side of the cage, and that resulted in shots that were just a little outside of their shooter's range. And you saw guys like, there was a couple instances where there was some over-dodging and guys trying to get so close to slip it in past night, and they couldn't. They couldn't do it.
Yeah, I came away kind of impressed with Cornell's D, question mark, in this game. Christian Knight made some huge saves, especially in a crucial third quarter and early fourth quarter. He finished with 14 saves, including a straight robbery on the crease early in the fourth quarter, just stuffing a doorstep shot after a lovely cross-crease feed. And while Ben Reeves did go off early in this game, I think, five of their first six goals, these slides and recovery to Reeves seemed so well executed later in the game. And they didn't let Matt Gaudette get slippery or get open on the crease. And once you honed in on those two, it kind of made all the other guys look for solutions on the offensive end for Yale. And there just did not seem to be an answer in this game, especially with how well Christian Knight was playing.
Yeah, I think for Cornell, we saw a complete effort from the Cornell offense after Princeton straight up embarrassed them in their Ivy League regular season finale last week. Like, you could – I was watching the tape, and I just stopped it, and you can draw a line across the field underneath the midfielders – and then another one over the top of the three attackmen. And the space in between those two lines is where Cornell got all of their shots. Off-ball movement was completely superb. They ran two-man wingo. They initiated from every corner. They just put together such a comprehensive effort. You know, this wasn't a mugging in the dark of the night. It was an outright assault right out in front of a cafe. They would mark David Chapman with a copy of Catcher in the Rye, and Yale was Yoko. It was bad.
Jeez.
It was bad.
You know, just watching this game, it was obviously an upset, but it just watching it didn't look like an upset. Cornell clearly looked the better team in this contest. And, man, Jeff Teague is magical. He is playing chess on the field when everyone else is playing checkers. It's unreal how the ball is in his stick for maybe 3 seconds. You blink, and then like 3 seconds later, it's in the back of the net. The guy is like two passes ahead of the defense at every point. The offense was superb. I was watching the game, and I said out loud, like, Cornell is outstanding in this game. They are playing superb offensive. They are playing superb on the offensive end, just with the off-ball movement and the passing. And, you know, I kind of think getting face-guarded on Friday sort of let Jeff Teague take the night off. I mean, he wasn't grinded down from having to orchestrate that offense all night against Brown. Because the whole offense just looked rejuvenated on Sunday. And I just also thought that Cornell scrapped hard for ground balls. And against a Yale team that is super tough off the ground, we've mentioned on this podcast before how good Yale is at just dominating off the ground. And I thought Cornell just really kind of proved to be the tougher team in that regard in this game. Hats off to Peter Milliman and that Cornell staff. I think it's about time we remove that interim tag from Milliman's title and give him the full head coaching duty.
The alums will come around. They'll come around. Don't worry. I got a feeling. I got an inside with a couple of alums, and they're coming around. They didn't like him at first, but they like him now. So that's in line. I think it's coming.
Kyle, we got Weird Watch of the Week. You've got a whole long segment written down, so hit me, man. What are you watching?
So, yeah, I had this whole segment planned out, and then I was just having a little chat with our publisher, Terry Foy, and he advised against me talking about a documentary I saw about incels, so I'm not going to talk about that, because when I think about it, he's definitely right. We should not talk about that on the podcast. Instead, I'm going to talk about a completely unnecessary action movie called American Assassin. Wow, is this movie ridiculous? The lead is the kid from those Maze Runner movies that I will never watch, and also Michael Keaton's in it. Keaton has maybe 8 scenes that could have all been filmed in a month, maybe 2 weeks. And Taylor Kitsch, yes, Riggins himself, is reduced to a one-note psycho as the villain. And I got to say, one of the common complaints about action movies is that there's not enough stakes, you know, or the stakes are disproportionate. This is wildly disproportionate, as the movie ends with a nuclear bomb going off under the surface of the ocean. But, Dan, no one dies. Like, are you kidding me with this? Like, no one, a nuclear bomb went off and no one dies? Oh, okay. The plot went into motion. I just assumed the bomb would be disarmed at some point. But then I remembered some battleships were tousled in the trailer. And then I watched the clumsiest nuclear bomb sequence ever filmed. This movie is trash. The idea of this movie is trash. And no one should ever see it, even though it was a 99-cent rental. Also, I watched the first episode of the new Karate Kid spinoff Cobra Kai on YouTube, and it is amazing. And I will buy YouTube Red as soon as the season is over so I can binge watch all of it.
Wow, Kyle. Always on that wall.
Taking bullets. Taking it for you guys.
Watching all the bad stuff that the entertainment world has to offer us. So my weird watch is that I haven't seen Infinity War yet. So I am missing out on all these great jokes on the internet.
You're not up on the memes.
Yeah, I am not with the memes for the Infinity War. I mean, everybody's having fun. Like, it feels like it's the Squidward meme where he is looking at Patrick and SpongeBob playing outside his window. Like, everybody's having fun but me. I got to get up with the memes. I don't feel so good. I'm just not into the Marvel Universe enough as you and some other people in the office are. But you know that I will be decked out in Chewbacca stuff for the god-awful incoming Han Solo movie. Correct, right? It's just take my money time. Star Wars, I'm there.
All right, if you're dressed up as Chewbacca, I'm not going to watch that movie with you. Like, you know that. It's not happening.
I mean, aren't you going to wear the Han Solo costume?
No.
No?
No, I'm not. I'm a little short for a stormtrooper, bro. You know what I'm saying? It's not happening.
Gotcha. Kyle, we got to give a shout out to our sponsor, Sideline Swap.
Yeah, I actually, I promised that I would put my cleats up, and I did, and no one's buying them. So we'll give it a couple days, but, you know, they're up there. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear, shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves for up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college or pro gear. All purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SideLineSwap.com, or download the iPhone app today.
Kyle, you are the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse.
Yes.
So, question for you is,
hit me.
How hot was this weekend in terms of helmets? Because there was some heat.
Yeah, man, the chrome helmets, they look good. I never liked the all silver kind of look, and they were really smart putting out different colors of the chrome, and I really dug that. I thought Hopkins' helmet was easily the best one. Easily. I just like that simple color combo. But yeah, it's the chrome helmets are hype. They're hype for sure.
Yeah, there was some good looking helmets this weekend. And I'm curious, when these helmets hit Sideline Swap, what is the over under
on price?
Yeah.
Kids always put those up for way too high. So I'm going to go with $450.
Okay, I was going to go $425.
No one will buy it for that, ever. But you'll get a ton of, like, trade requests. That's why you got to put no trades in your post, kids. No trades.
All right, Kyle, I think it's time for what everybody is waiting for. Monday after Selection Sunday, it's time for Bracket Breakdown.
Yeah. Do you have the bleep button ready?
Sure.
Holy this is the best bracket I've ever seen. Look at these games. There are upsets across the board. Finally, all my hipster BS Tuesday night games have yielded results. I love it. I'm so excited. Are you not excited? You're excited. Tell me you're excited.
I'm excited, Kyle. There is a lot of riveting matchups in this bracket. But it's also a really screwed up bracket. There is a lot of questions from the decisions for me in this one.
Wait, hold on. Time out before we go. Did you switch brains with me and become the antagonist in this podcast just now?
Yes. I'll wear that hat.
I am the optimist, and you are the pessimist right now.
Yeah. Give me that black hat. I am the villain now, I guess. Okay.
Stay up there.
Yeah, so hot take here. The eye test said put Rutgers in as the last team in.
Yeah.
That's just personally the way I feel. I feel like Bucknell probably had the best resume claim. I think those Yale and Loyola wins look good then, and they look good now. I think Ohio State had a strong claim as well. They played well down the stretch, played a really tough schedule. But I think for me, I just can't get over the fact that they lost 5 straight games and lost 6 of 7 games in the middle of the season. Across the board, though, there is a ton of other questionable decisions here. Why is Robert Morris in the play-in game? Bobby Moe had a super respectable season, beat Penn State. I know I'm a little bit of a knocker on the RPI here, but I feel like this is a case where the RPI can be useful. Robert Morris had a much superior RPI ranking than Richmond. So I think Richmond should be in this game. And most projections had Syracuse and Cornell playing each other. The question is, why does Cuse host, particularly to a team that beat them head-to-head, won their conference tournament, and had a superior win percentage? Like, really think this through. A 12-4 Cornell that won the Ivy League championship is traveling to a 9-6 Syracuse team. It just doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, there's so many other things, like, why does the Big East have three? The Big Ten only has two. Why does the ACC have four? There's a whole lot of questions here.
Okay. So let me tackle these arguments one by one for each team. And I'm just going to play devil's advocate. This is not necessarily what I think, but this is the argument against. Bucknell lost in the semifinal of their tournament. Done. Win your games. Let's see. Ohio State lost in their tournament. Win your games.
Ohio State lost by a pretty fluky bounce of the ball, though.
No. We don't play that game. We're not playing that game. Also, Rutgers lost their tournament. I think so. Here's my argument for Rutgers, though, because I have a soft spot for them as well. I think that if they beat Ohio State, they'd be in, no matter what.
Yeah.
Because then you look at the quality of losses, if that's a thing, which it isn't. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And so Villanova is like the tax you pay for this great field. That's how I look at it. That's how I look at all of this. I think you have some good points about the playoff, the play-in games and all that stuff, and I'll let you get to that. I'm going to let you finish. But I think that all of the complaints are pretty easily dismissed. Like, you didn't even bring up Navy, but people are talking about Navy should have been in. Navy lost in their championship game. Had a chance, man. You know, in the semifinal, they were in the tournament. Had a chance. Didn't get it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't do that. That was your chance. I don't know. I don't think that you look at all these teams, and yeah, could they have been in over Villanova? If you're going to pick one team, like, I guess you could pick Villanova as the team that whatever, but you went back and brought up wins that Villanova has better quality wins at the time that you brought up other teams' wins earlier in the season. So I think that if you look at everything as even and not how teams are playing right now, which is what a lot of people do when they complain about the field, right?
Yeah.
I think if you look at everything being even from a, you know, progression of the season standpoint, I don't know. I think I'm not saying Villanova makes better sense, but it's not insane. Like, people are overreacting to it. I think you're just overreacting a little bit. That's all.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I'm not going to knock Villanova for getting in because, you know, just they're obviously deserving of that spot if the committee thought so. And just seeing the way that they reacted in that video, hearing their name be called, is awesome. And that's what it's what the sport is all about. And I just, you know, have been curating this discourse on the internet about all this outrage, and I tend to agree with a lot of it. Like, another one is, how is Johns Hopkins the 5 seed after winning their conference tournament and in doing so beating the number 1 seed team in the country? Like, they just won the hardest conference in lacrosse and they got the 5 seed. Like, it just doesn't seem to translate. I think the one I still can't get over, though, is Cornell having to go to Syracuse. Like, you can't just not have that Sunday night Syracuse game in the Carry Dome, can you, Kyle? You just can't have it.
Do you really want to know? We're gonna get into this? Do you want to start? You want to open this box?
Sure, sure.
We'll open the box. I got a box right here. I'm gonna open. Hold on, let me get it. Actually, it's funny because this box has a bunch of money in it. Weird. Look at the field, dude. Like, why do you think Denver and Notre Dame are playing each other? Well, I don't know.
Flights.
Weirdo that worked out. Pretty close, wouldn't you say? Proximity-wise?
Yeah, well, I feel like everybody had this matchup because it's Western teams.
Sure. Sure. But why?
Flights.
Just because the numbers worked out?
Flights.
Because of the flights. That's right. How many people do you think Cornell Stadium holds?
Probably not a lot, and not as much as the Cary Dome.
How much does the dome hold? Yeah, weird. So, like, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news. I don't want to be the guy who's, you know, telling you that there's the boogeyman out there, okay? Lacrosse doesn't have nearly as much money as you think it does, okay? If it did, I would be making Bill Simmons money. I'm in an attic apartment right now, dog. No, that's not how it works. That's not how any of this works. There's not millions of dollars being spilled onto the table. You know, people aren't signing, you know, six-figure deals for, you know, shoe endorsements. It's not how it works. There isn't nearly as much money in lacrosse as we all think there is. And this field is evidence of that. Whether you want to deny that or not, you can try. But I don't have wool cover in my eyes.
Kyle's woke.
I'm just telling you what's up.
Woke.
I mean, I don't like that term. I'm not using that term as it applies to this. But, like, I think that I'm just not. That's not what I do. I think that you just have to take that stuff into consideration. And it's definitely part of how they make their decisions. Like, money is a big part of all of this. And there just isn't enough. Like, it would be great to see, you know, all the I think they did the best job of what they could, though. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm totally negative on this whole tournament. I love it. I think this. And let me tell you, I actually was talking to our editor-in-chief, Matt Kinnear, and I was like, man, do you realize that, like, because I do the Tuesday night thing, that I have seen, like, so many signature wins for all these teams that so many other people haven't? And I'm not talking about the teams that everyone knows. I'm talking about the other teams, like Robert Morris, you know, Richmond. I've seen Richmond's best game and Richmond's worst game. You know what I mean? Like, these are things that happen when you watch as much as we do. And that's why I'm excited, because there's so many quality teams here. You know what I mean? Like, very few people picked Canisius to even win, you know, the MAC, but they did. And I saw a couple games with them. I was like, yeah, this, you know, they're not bad. They got a couple players. Boston Hill's pretty good. They got a nice little LSM, picks up every GB that's anywhere near them. You know, like, there are players on all these teams that deserve attention. And that's what I can't wait to get into this week. When we start breaking down teams, it's not just the team, it's the individual player. And you're going to see guys get spotlights that never had them before. Like, that's exciting to me. You know, you're going to see guys that make plays that you've never heard of. That's great. You want to talk about growing the game? That's how you grow it. You don't grow it by having every Big Ten team in there. And I'm sorry, ACC fans, you don't grow up by having every ACC team in there. If I'm going to have a gripe, it's that they're all in there.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
And you took their AQ away? It doesn't matter. You tried to nerf them, and they came back with a bazooka and shoved it in your mouth. And we're like, no, we're going anyway. You know why? All comes back to money. Just saying.
Well, Kyle, we've been negative Nancy's Debbie Downers for a little bit longer. Let's actually start diving into the bracket. Let's start at the top. Number one seeded Maryland playing the winner of Canisius and Robert Morris in the play-in game. First and foremost, who are we taking in this play-in game? I'm feeling Bobby Moe takes this one.
I do think it's going to be Bobby Moe. And I think that upset potential for Maryland is very much there. Very much there.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Robert Morris can give Maryland a bit of a scare. I mean, I would still heavily favor the one-seeded Terps at home against Robert Morris, but I think there is potential there for the one seed to experience a first-round game that is a lot closer than they might expect. Going into the next game, we got the Dane Train hosting a playoff game for the second year in a row. They've got Richmond. Kyle, where does this one start for you?
So it's interesting. This is a team that was really defined by their defense last year. This year, I think that they lean a little bit more on their offense to make plays. And in the games that they've won, or the games that they've dominated, it's been because their offense is really good at scoring from the middle to, you know, short range, which, you know, you could say that about any lacrosse team, but they're very good at it. And I think that Albany has a tendency to, unfortunately, as we saw in the Yale game, wildly over pursue. So this could be a situation where, like, Albany, you know, Richmond could get up on them. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, UMass Lowell got up on them in the semifinal in the America East. Like, that's no joke. Like, I think Albany might have to claw their way back, but I think that there's just too much quality there offensively, and Ireland definitely gives them an advantage. Like, that's going to, he might have a perfect game.
Okay. Diving into number three, Yale hosting UMass. Kyle, I know you watched UMass in the CAA tournament over the weekend. I think this is an interesting matchup that starts at the Faceoff X, Noah Rack going against Connor Mackey. But UMass, man, this is a team that cannot be slept on. And I think that, you know, of a few of these games, this could be the sneaky good game of the first round. I feel like UMass will come to play.
I think that people are expecting it to be a rock fight because, listen, everything in the CAA is basically a rock fight. I think that the one thing that Yale has that UMass doesn't have is multiple shutdown poles. But I also think UMass's goalie, Sean Scannone, is playing out of his mind right now. He had 16 saves in the championship game. He has 82 saves in his last six games for the Minutemen. And UMass has won 11 games in a row after losing to Albany at home. The thing about UMass, and I'm going to get into this because I'm sure I'm going to get assigned to do this game because I know both these teams fairly well. The thing about UMass that you have to watch out for is their tempo control. You know, it's not just Noah Rack at the Faceoff X. They are early offense, like, connoisseurs. It's a different UMass approach. It's a different kind of way that they play. Like, obviously, they're known for being tough off the ground, contesting every ground ball, just like Yale is. So that's going to be just like two bruisers fighting over a pretty girl in the middle of the field for pretty much the entire game. That's going to be fun. That's going to be really fun to watch. That's going to be two guys just bare knuckle boxing each other for everything. But the thing about Yale is Connor Mackey. And Connor Mackey is one of the only faceoff guys, I think, that has the size and ability to carry through traffic that gives UMass trouble. So obviously Yale is heavily favored here, but I think you're an idiot if you're sleeping on UMass. Don't sleep.
Don't do it.
Do not.
Don't. Next game we've got is number four Duke hosting the last team in Villanova. I just feel like Duke is the heavy favorite here at home, senior class like that. This is a team that had to stew over losing in the ACC semifinals and turned around and beat BU pretty badly. I think the Blue Devils are poised for a May run.
Yeah, and which team is healthiest heading into it? Obviously, there's been a lot made of Villanova's injuries and guys getting back to full strength. I just think Duke's defense is too much, and their faceoff unit will probably have a pretty good day against Villanova, who also their unit is really banged up.
Kyle, delving into the next one, number five, Johns Hopkins hosting Georgetown. I don't know, man. I know Georgetown looking great off that Big East tournament victory over Denver. I don't know. I just don't see them getting past the Blue Jays, who are red hot, playing at home in this one. Just like what we talked about earlier in the podcast, they're executing at every level of the field, and I feel like they are not due for a slip up here.
Yeah, so I'm going to step on a couple of my points that we were going to talk about later in these other championship games. The thing about Georgetown that I've seen, I think I'm one of the only people on the staff that's seen them as much as most people have, and I have always maintained my theory with them is they are at their best when Nick Morocco is on, their goaltender. When they beat Denver, guess how many saves he had?
I'm guessing a lot.
14. They also have one of the best defensive midfielders in the country in Ryan Hersey, who is gigantic and also cannot be run by very easily. And Jake Caraway is a legitimate threat for a hat trick every time he steps on the field. Georgetown is not the Georgetown that you are used to. Okay? Like, this is a legit, legit team.
Next game, super excited for this one, Kyle. Night game, NASCAR race in Baltimore. number 6 Loyola hosting Virginia, a rematch of a awesome early season game, this time up at Ridley. Where do we even start? High octane offense for Virginia going against undoubtedly one of the best players in the country in Patrick Spencer. It's just going to be a fun one, man. You don't expect anything less from this matchup.
No, I think this is probably one of the star matchups, followed by the next two we're going to talk about. I mean, this is where the meat of it all is. This is a, like you said, track meet, NASCAR race, whatever you want to say. It's so funny to me with all the people that were whinging about Virginia and like, oh, they're not going to get in now. They had their chance, then they got smoked, you know, like, and people talk about their system and all the things like that. But one of the things Virginia does not have is a Patrick Spencer. You know, they don't have that signature guy. They have a lot of guys that are close. They have a lot of guys that are on the ascendancy, but they don't have a dominant player like, you know, like Cornell is Jeff Teat. You know, Yale has Ben Reeves. Loyola has Patrick Spencer. Virginia has Dox Aiken.
Michael Krause.
Is that Michael Krause? Is that who we're looking at?
80 points.
Laviano? Like, where are we going? I think that the ability to take over a game when it's not going your way, that advantage rests with Loyola for me. But I think that if Virginia can, you know, get Loyola to, you know, bait them into running with them, and Loyola says, sure, we'll try that, and then keeps playing, Virginia could build up a lead that might be tough for Loyola to come back on. But I don't know. It seems like kind of a home field advantage might be a little too strong there, you know?
Yeah, well, the Cavaliers do have Michael Krause, who has an 80-plus point season. But I don't hold him in the same regard as I do Pat Spencer, because Pat Spencer is a freak athlete. Yeah. Like, Michael Krause is very strong. Like, he is very pound-for-pound, effective, explosive. But Pat Spencer is, like, a next-caliber athlete playing this position. I agree to that point. I feel like he takes over a game even when the entire defense tries to hone in on him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be an interesting battle at the faceoff X. I thought Justin Schwenk in the early season matchup did pretty well. I feel like that Fogo unit between Savio and Orefice for Loyola has really come on in big moments, big victories in the season. And then I definitely think that they have definitely have the steadier defense, right? Foster Huggins, that close unit with Jacob Stover and Cage. That could be the matchup. The Virginia offense going against that Loyola defense, how much does the Loyola defense stop them?
Can you stop Virginia is always the question you ask when you talk about Virginia. Can you stop them from scoring? And if you do, you win.
Next game, we got a quarterfinal rematch from last year. Notre Dame, the 7 seed, hosting Denver. Like we said, Kyle, we all saw this one coming. What do we think about this one? When we think about the quarterfinal from last year, all we think about is Trevor Baptiste, 21 of 22. Irish get absolutely blown out. We turn that around to this season. The Irish come away with like a like convincing, like we controlled the pace victory at home. We're getting that rematch this year in the playoffs.
So this is all that I want from this game. Are you ready? I just want the best of these two teams to show up. Like, I don't want to see the Denver team that scored 3 goals. I don't want to see the Notre Dame team that scored 2 goals. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to see that. I want to see the teams that can put up 18, 17, 19 goals on people. I want to see double digits. Please, for the love of God, give me double digit games. Like, score more than 10 goals in these games, please. Like, the country is watching. Honestly, I'm pleading with you. Just take the chains off. Let them shoot. Let them boys shoot. Please. Please, we need it. We need it. Lacrosse needs you. Offensive coordinators, take the clipboard. Just let it fly. You got to let it fly this game.
Let it fly.
I really want that. And because I want it so much, Dan, I know I won't get it. I know I won't.
You never know, man. I actually kind of thought the same thing. I was like, if these two teams play as good as we've seen them play, this could be one of the most exciting matchups of the first round. Because, you know, last year's game is the anomaly in this series. Notre Dame-Denver has always been fantastic. Hoping we get another one in this one. Finally, Kyle, our last game. Number 8 Syracuse hosting Ivy League champion Cornell. Of course, a rematch of the regular season game in which Cornell won pretty handily at home. I'm curious if Syracuse does what Princeton and Brown does and completely shuts off Jeff Teat and forces everybody else on that Cornell offense to step up.
So it's funny. I just got some Facebook messages from my friend who went to Cornell. I'm gonna read them on the pod. This is live. Tell me how Cornell beats Yale soundly and they are still unseeded and has to play away against Syracuse, a team they hammered earlier in the year. What do I say to it? What do I say to him? I'm holding the phone right now. What do I text back? What do I say?
What did you tell me earlier on the pod?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hold on. I'm just going to send a money bag. 1 second. All right, I'm good.
One emoji to describe Cornell getting snubbed over Syracuse.
One emoji to describe Cornell getting snubbed. Money bag.
Just a money bag.
Just a money bag. He's going to be so mad. This is great podcast material. I'm sure you're watching.
But seriously, though, like, how is Cornell visiting in this game? But either way, it's the Syracuse time slot. It's the Sunday night game in the Carrier Dome. First round, a tradition unlike any other, Kyle. Where does this game start for you?
I mean, for me, it's can Nick Mellon lock down Teat? That's it. That's like, it's all I care about. I think it's what the game hinges on, because people forget he actually did a really good job on him. Like, he did a really good, he did. Teat didn't score goals on Nick Mellon. He scored them on other people, and it was off of switches and picks. And I think that's what you're going to have to look for is the rest of the matchup. I mean, I feel like we got a Cuse team coming into a situation where, you know, they beat the bag off of Binghamton in their first game, and then they played Albany, and they thought they were going to be big, and they got crushed. And guess what Syracuse just did? They beat the crap out of Colgate. Going to have high confidence. I don't know.
Yeah, this one is truly, like, the pick'em game of the lot. I feel like every other game, you can argue for a strong favorite. I feel like this one really is up for grabs.
The like favorite in this one is the fans. Also, I got a response. Tell me how Syracuse has the 11th ranked RPI to Cornell's 9th and still gets seeded. I mean, that's an AQ situation. I'm not going to belabor that point. But
the RPI!
He's doing great. He's making sound arguments. He's making sound arguments. And then he predicted the scoreline that I'm not going to read on the podcast.
But Mikhail, the RPI is not in the selection criteria.
Oh, that's right.
It is.
Wait. Shoot. Oh no, it is. Wait, but is it? Is the eye test? What's an eye test though?
I don't know.
Is that like when you cover one eye and watch a team?
I think that's in the criteria. Like when you see the Carrier Dome filled, you know you got to just put Syracuse in there.
Yeah.
Kyle. That is our show. No scoreboard today. We'll do the bracket breakdown just for the scoreboard. I'm excited as heck, man.
It's going to be great.
Like, remember how excited we were last year after this podcast?
I think we were just more. I was excited for the podcast to be over last year. I think it went better this year. But, you know, I'm excited just going into the games. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Of course, if you guys have thoughts about the podcast, hit us up on Twitter. You can find me at Dan Abern. At Dan_Abern. Of course, tell your friends it's winning season. Everybody's got to know about the In the Crease podcast in May. Tell them, friend, subscribe, leave a rating. Kyle.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at the Kyle Devitt. There was some tweet kind of repercussions, let's say, like people misreading a couple tweets I was sending out today, but that's fine. That's fine. We said it straight. Everything's fair. Come on at me. I think we're already in trouble anyway because of this podcast today, but like, you know, we'll still be like alive. You can find us. We'll be on Twitter. We'll be on Instagram. Rate, leave a review. Thanks for listening. See you guys later. Yeah.